It really wasn't until the day after 9/11, what, September 12th, 2001, that you said you really experienced blatant racism. Tell us about that.
Before 9/11, there was more so just a little bit of picking on, a little just minor bullying, I guess, because my parents pray five times a day. So people would see that and kind of giggle, like friends walking down the street or coming over. But it wasn't until 9/11 when it was really brutal. It was the day after this boy on the back of the bus shouted terrorist and said, you know, 9/11's your fault. It's your family's fault. And at the time, you know, as a 11, 12-year-old kid, I didn't really understand why anybody would say that. Growing up now, I kind of understand he probably heard his parents or his family say that, because no 12-year-old is really thinking that. So it wasn't until, yeah, after 9/11 that a lot of people started bullying.
How did this blatant racism manifest itself? What images, what memories do you have?
Well, there were a lot of hateful, derogatory terms and accusations being held against me and my family. A lot of the times, even at work, even, you know, people who weren't really my friends would ask me really out of the norm, kind of absurd questions, you know, like, I heard in Islam, the Quran says this is okay or that's okay. And a lot of it was just really, really just obnoxious and horrible, you know, just a lot of it, the degradation of women or violence against women. And it's a lot of times I felt like, you know, I had to defend myself and my parents when I really shouldn't have had to defend myself at all, because we weren't doing anything wrong. Our pure existence seemed like it had to be defended on a constant basis. I'm myself not very religious. I am not a Muslim, but I support anybody's choice to follow whatever religion they choose. So I felt the need to constantly have to defend my parents because people had these really bizarre ideas of what Islam is and what practicing Muslims do.
And in that constant defense of your parents, at some point you actually were starting to almost feel resentful of your parents, correct?
After a while, I hated the fact that I grew up as an Arab and that I had parents who were Muslim. I just thought being white would probably just be a lot easier. So it took me a while to embrace my ethnicity, especially when I was 13 years old. I went to the Middle East for the first time to visit my family, and it really opened up my eyes and kind of made me more furious with Westerners because I didn't see what they thought the religion was. When I was there, because Jordan is where I went to, and it's a predominantly Muslim country, none of the accusations towards the religion that I've heard from Westerners were relevant. They weren't prevalent in that country. So I was still frustrated, you know, because of who I was, because I knew I was going to go back home and the bullying was just going to come back. But then I was also frustrated with my peers because I just didn't understand where these absurd ideas were coming from.
Now, in a very insightful column you wrote and was published in last month's Karibu News, you said you really had two options, essentially either assimilation or isolation. What did you choose?
Well, I decided to just embrace biculturalism because I really loved being able to go out with friends and, you know, go have a Western meal and listen to Western music. But then I can go home and it's completely different when I'm at my house with my parents because, you know, on the walls we have pictures of mosques, we have pictures in Arabic writing, and the food my mom makes is purely ethnic and homemade Western food, and the music that they listen to and their beliefs and their ideologies. It was really interesting because I felt, you know, I'm getting the best of both worlds. I'm learning what it's like, you know, as a Muslim, even though I'm not Muslim, I'm learning this point of view of the West from a Muslim family because my parents are very proud. My father, he wouldn't even really identify himself as Arab American. He calls himself a Palestinian. I guess if you want to get technical, he is an American because he was born in this country, but he's very prideful. And he will not call himself just an American. He's a Palestinian. I mean, he even calls us Palestinians, me and my sisters. So it was really awesome to be able to go home to that and go home to parents who were so proud of their religion and proud of their nationality. And then it was interesting to go out to school or hang out with friends and see two different worlds. So although I didn't feel that biculturalism was accepted yet, I accepted it as my own, because I didn't want to assimilate because that's just not who I am. And isolation, I'm just too much of a sociable, talkative person. I couldn't really just kind of isolate myself, even though I felt I had to make that decision. I just ended up doing what made me happy, and I stopped worrying about pleasing friends or even at a point pleasing my parents because they wanted to have, you know, a good Muslim daughter. And they have a good daughter. She's just not Muslim.
Now, the fourth edition of the Karibu News will hit the streets in just a few days. Give us an update.
It is going great. We are getting a lot of positive feedback from the community. A lot of people are really enjoying what we do. I mean, the other day, we had a gentleman who speaks Swahili come past the office, and he picked up the newspaper, and he said, "Oh, Karibu, this is my language." And it's really nice to see that excitement so somebody can pick the newspaper up, and they can read in their own language, because a lot of folks don't speak English. English is an extremely hard language to learn. We want them to know what's going on in the community and the services that are available to them, so they're able to learn about that in their own language. And I think it's comforting, because a lot of it has to do with their identity, and we can keep them intact with that identity and not feel like they have to assimilate. They can just integrate and still be themselves, and also, like I did, take advantage of biculturalism.
And, of course, there's a lot of talk about biculturalism. We have a lot of immigrants here. We have a lot of refugees. What else has to happen to sort of promote that concept of acceptance?
A lot. It's not really a simple, this needs to happen and that needs to happen. There's a lot that needs to happen, especially on the local level. You know, been meeting with a lot of people who are putting a lot of effort towards building the community and building awareness towards Westerners. And I mean, a lot needs to happen, whether it's the communication between the police and immigrants, or refugees having to go seek medical attention and not being able to have a doctor who can speak their language or understand what they're saying. Or even if it's as simple as, you know, I have a flat tire, I don't know what to do. I mean, a lot needs to be done on a state level, especially, and on a local level. So we are just a small part in trying to make that happen.